ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
ABC AFL Daily Podcast time. Daniel Harford, the former Hawk, former Blue, 2019 AFLW Coach of the Year, equipment lover in Aussie Rules football, also the man who added the little addendum to the Hawthorn song many, many years ago.
It's true.
Half, great to have you in.
A pleasure to be a part of this with you every single week, Benny. Love it.
We love it. Five drops per week, five different flavours. You know the line, Half.
Be a friend, tell a friend.
Yep. And you can
You
can go onto the Wall of Fame. So
how many on the wall?
Brody Grundy's gone onto the wall, Half.
Has he?
Yeah, he did a little Q&A. So I replied to him saying, do you listen to the ABC AFL Daily podcast? And he shared it to his 115,000 followers. So Brody Grundy onto the Wall of Fame. We do a takeaway. It is a theme that we have Sunday here night. On a Sunday night, because you like takeaway on a Sunday evening. But our overarching round takeaway, we're counting the cost of all of the injuries from how this round of football we've just lived through. So the headline injuries, Zach Butters with a high-grade syndesmosis injury, headed for surgery. Port Adelaide are telling us 4 weeks, which seems very short to me.
Seems unders.
Jeremy Cameron's got an AC joint. We saw it pop out and pop back down as he was heavily bumped. And then there's a litany of other injuries to players not as high profile as Jeremy Cameron and Zach Butters out of this round.
Yeah, it's getting to that stage of the year, isn't it? It's a survival of the fittest. That's why it's a great success to be able to get through and win premierships, because you battle not just the opposition, you battle the challenge of surviving 23 weeks of home and away footy in a finals campaign. And as we always say, your best ability in footy is your availability. And that's what's going to come down to at the end. We've seen Fremantle be really healthy from a list perspective, and look at their outcome and their output this year so far. That's, obviously there's coaching and there's star players and system and all sort of stuff, but your best players being out there makes a massive difference. So if you haven't got that, it does start to challenge you, and teams that will be vying for top four spots or top six or wildcard spots are going to need things to go their way in the back end, and this weekend has shown that significantly.
Your best ability is availability. The first of the games we're going to launch into is the game we've just witnessed, Half. Melbourne taking on Richmond. The D's won by 46 points, moved to sixth on the ladder. 11-6 is now their record. They are certainly eyeing a top four finish. And our takeaway here is they are making the MCG, our shining symbol of Melbourne, an absolute house of horrors for anyone who wishes to play them here. 9-0 here at the MCG in 2026.
It's a great record. Well, it's clearly the best record you could get with 9-0 at the mighty Coliseum that is the MCG. And as a result of that, and as a result of the way they're playing and the lack of fear that they have in any situation against any opposition, I've rocketed them into fourth seed for the premiership. Mm. They're not top four in the ladder at the moment. There's a couple of good teams in front of them still, but I reckon the MCG factor is significant in their capacity to contend for a premiership, which would be one of the all-time great stories.
So who have you got them behind at the moment?
I've got them behind Fremantle, Hawthorn, Brisbane. Yeah, they're the three.
So you've got Sydney down in
fifth. Well, MCG factor is significant in all this. Brisbane have been here and they've done it plenty of times. Hawthorn own it. Fremantle haven't owned it, but they're the best team in footy by a fair margin at the moment, so they have to have the top seeding. And then the D's come thick and fast, and I know there's still a fair chunk of the season to go. What have they got, 6 weeks to go?
Yep.
But they are proving that this venue, which everyone needs to play well at in finals time, is absolutely home for them. And they're making no secrets that this is something they're chasing. And I love it. I love what they're doing with everything.
What about round 22? We get Fremantle and Melbourne at the MCG. That is going to be a juicy one. So Geelong in a couple of weeks at the MCG. And then that game against Fremantle are going to be a few that we look forward to. Jacob Van Rooyen as well booted an equal career high 6 goals today, Half, and I said a couple of times on the broadcast, I feel like he's the embodiment of Melbourne's improved scoring prowess this season. So 10th time they've gone past 100, 9-1 in those games, but under Simon Goodwin, they were a little slower with their ball movement, more staid. They would go long down the line to contest. They go quickly now, and it suits the leading key forward.
Well, it suits the playing group from what we've seen. We've seen so many players blossom this season under Stephen King and this new offensive system, that, and we shouldn't undersell their defence either. I mean, They've averaged, I think, 90 points, I think, a game against. But they're kicking more than that, so they're going okay. But they kept the Tigers to 65. And outside of the first sort of 6 minutes, weren't really threatened at any stage. Tigers kicked a couple of goals early and kept the game in balance for a bit. But no, their offensive system is suiting their players. The talent is emerging. And when you think about it, it does make a bit of sense. And we've seen the modern sort of game evolve into more offense than defense, or attack and defense, depending on which language you like to use. And it makes perfect sense because these players come in to the draft, to the system through the draft. And they're normally the best players.
They're good players, aren't they?
They're the best players that get the looks in the AFL system. So making that building a system around their talents and their flair and their the capacity they have to play with ball in hand makes a bit of sense, doesn't it?
It does to me. So up to sixth.
I get the defensive system, and Mick Malthouse will be going, now you've got to have defence to win premierships, and Dennis Pagan was the same, and Kevin Sheedy's a bit the same. And Brisbane have been a great defensive team as well in the last couple of years, awesome on the offense.
I think both of those things can be true, Half. Like, you can teach them defensive systems, but don't overcoach them on offense. Like, the kids come into the system knowing how to attack.
Yep.
Let them play their natural game, whatever they see, whatever the kick is, handball, whatever it is. Take the option. You know how to attack.
Yeah.
Go and do that.
Couldn't agree more.
The next game we're going to move on to is Fremantle and Sydney. Admittedly, it was a long time ago, way back on Thursday night. Like, it feels like a lifetime ago. Fremantle defeating Sydney by 38 points. Our takeaway in this game, top of the table clash, first one we've had since 2023, given the ladder is movable throughout a season. So not very often we actually get first versus second in a game. But our takeaway is whether Daniel Harford learnt more about Fremantle or Sydney on Thursday night.
I learnt more about Fremantle. Now, I know Sydney are a great pressure team, always have been. It's part of their DNA as a footy club, and they were enormous. That first half, what they put on, the pressure they applied in that first half, probably two and a half quarters, was outrageous. Sitting at home on the couch has gone, oh, how good are these blokes? This is so exciting. And not, you know, I'll talk about offence before and attack before in the Melbourne conversation, but defence excited me on Thursday night, the way that Sydney just gave Fremantle no time and space. And the challenge was going to be for Fremantle to stay the course. And eventually, they were able to get the game on terms and just outwill and outlast Sydney at their own game. And I thought it was a brilliant performance from Fremantle. So I was absolutely in the Fremantle, learn more about Fremantle camp. To kick 100 points in the second half against Sydney.
Crazy.
Is an outrageous number against that quality team. So, yeah, more about Fremantle. And it just cemented their status as the best team in footy for me. And I think most people would be of that view after that performance.
Didn't even have to hit the Wharfie time button.
No.
Just left it unused, kept it in the locker. 6 day break into a 5 day break coming back from Canberra.
Yeah.
And ran all over the top of them. So a few things to pick apart out of this. Are they better when Mason Cox plays rather than Sean Darcy, who is managed?
I'm a Mason Cox man.
So am I.
Yeah, I think he works better.
I think for whatever reason as well, Luke Jackson plays better when he plays with Mason Cox. More time rucking. Mason Cox comes in a little bit. I don't know whether there's like a weird dynamic between him and Sean. Like, Sean was the established ruck when Luke came over from Melbourne. Luke's now clearly the main number one ruckman. I don't know whether that impacts him somewhat psychologically, but it helps Jackson be the best version of him. So,
yeah, and he's a better ruckman than he is forward. Like, he's not a bad forward either, by the way. Probably one of the best ruck forwards in the comp. But he's a better ruck, and he creates a totally different dynamic for Fremantle when he is in the ruck. But Darcy's not a very good forward. So whereas Cox can play that role and be quite effective, which he did again on Thursday night. So I think the balance for Fremantle works better when Mason Cox is in the team, because it allows Luke Jackson to be the Luke Jackson that we all know and love. And that's a match-winning player for Fremantle more often than not. So I think that's the way it's got to go forward, which is no good for Sean Darcy if that happens. But right, Mason Cox has earned the right to be a part of that team.
I have no background here, but I wouldn't be surprised if Sean Darcy is maybe somewhere else next year with maybe a percentage of his salary being paid by Fremantle. That's not me trying to break news. That's just me
looking ahead. Yeah, I think that would be a fair observation of the scenario.
Yeah, possibly reading the tea leaves. Where do you have Alex Pearce in the All-Australian race?
I've got him captain.
You got him in the team?
Yeah, I've got him in the team, and I've got him captain. Jordan Dawson was my man as captain midway through the year. But just watching Alex Pearce play, and I was thinking this on Thursday night watching, I don't think there's another defender in particular in the competition that you'd name first in your team. if you wanted to play, build a team around of a key position player, I reckon Alex Pearce is your man. He's a much better player than I gave him credit for 3 years ago, 2 years ago. He's become a superstar of the competition because he's not a very, flashy defender. He doesn't get too many sort of headlines and articles written about him, but boy, goodness, he's never beaten. He makes great decisions when to come off his opponent and impact and his ability to impact when he does do that. And he's clean and he just gets the job done. I think he's fabulous, Alex Pearce. My admiration just increases every single week. And Thursday night, it went above again because I thought he was huge in that performance against the Sydney Swans.
I actually took a lot out of the game to do with Sydney half. And part of the reason is their losses now against Hawthorn, Geelong, Brisbane and Fremantle. So it feels like the very best teams.
Yep, get a hold of them.
I mean, admittedly, Geelong have slipped back a little bit, but maybe they're just not quite at that absolute top end.
You've got them out of the top four seeds as well,
have you? Yeah, I do. I think I do. Yeah. On the back of what I've
I think that's fair.
I've seen there. Just a very quick answer here, Half, before we move on. Did you like seeing the taunting rule on Thursday night? It was prevalent. We had one at each end.
Yep.
Yep, me too.
I don't like it. I don't like the taunting. As long as they play, I know you said be quick. As long as they play the rule every time it happens.
Yeah,
this one last week. I can't remember the game, but something that happened last week in a game, and it didn't get a free kick. And I thought, well, you've missed a chance there to really set the tone. But that was a free kick. Don't be stupid.
Yeah.
Because what happens if Chad Warner turns around, Robbie Muir style, and backhands whoever it was? Who was it?
Initially it was Luke Ryan rubbing Chad Warner's head.
Luke Ryan. So what happens if Chad Warner turns around, big backhand swing, and clubs Luke Ryan?
Well, I think
because he got his head rubbed.
You're part of the reason they brought this in, because you did a half serious on it earlier in the year.
Prancing Pony.
You were very strong about it, and Swanee was listening on his Monday commute into AFL House, and he thought...
He loves the pod.
That's a good point from Half.
Wouldn't hurt him to
tell
a friend.
That's a good point, and he added it in. So cheerio to you, Swanee, as you drive in on your Monday morning. GWS and Geelong, a 13-point win for GWS. I caught the second half of this game, and when I tuned in, this is not me fibbing at all, GWS trailed by 39 points 20 minutes into the third quarter.
Yep.
They kicked two late goals, because I was coming back from the Saturday afternoon game, then kicked 9 of the last 10 goals to win an equal club record comeback and leave Geelong in a tailspin. That's our takeaway. They've lost 5 of the last 6, the Cats.
And they've lost some key players now. And this is what we were talking about before with availability and your health is your wealth in the world of footy in the back end of the season. Geelong now find themselves in a challenging position. But the Giants, yeah, I was with you. I was down at the Cattery for a VFL game with the ABC TV team. And came back and saw the second half of that. And I couldn't believe. I must have got there at three-quarter time because I didn't see them kick the last two goals of the quarter. But then I was watching the last quarter. I thought, hang on a second, they're running all over the top here. And Geelong had three players that couldn't come back onto the field, so they're down a couple of rotations, clearly. But it was a really powerful last quarter performance from the Giants. I don't know how they got to the point where they still believe, but they have become a team that, despite the fact that the scoreboard goes against them at times, they still believe they can be better. And yesterday showed that emphatically. It was a brilliant performance. And it was some of their kids that stood up too. Not only the leaders stood up, some of their kids stood up and made it a really painful afternoon for the Cats. So it's a couple of big weeks in a row for the Giants when I think, I won't say most people, but I certainly started to think that their run was over for 2026 on the back of what had happened prior to the last couple of weeks. I thought, maybe just been a bridge too far for them with their injuries and their good players out. But their last 2 weeks suggested that the wild card is certainly in the offing still.
Oh, I'll tell you what is funny. I mean, Dwayne Russell is the master of the sell. So I was watching on Fox Footy.
Yep.
And Dwayne never gives up on a game.
No.
He's there right to the end. There's a pulse. you get a lot of those out of Dwayne.
You just get the feeling.
If they could kick the next one. and they'd kick those two. And he sort of said each time, they're just alive in it. And I thought, Is this Dwayno selling me or are they in this? And Dwayno was right. They came charging back and got over his beloved Cats. He played for Geelong back in the day, Dwayno. So there you have it. The Giants winning by 13 points. Just repeating the news on Jeremy Cameron. That AC joint popped out. Tanner Bruin had the neck injury. Jack Henry couldn't fly with a throat issue. And Dangerfield had a sore calf right throughout as well. So the ladder as it stands at the moment, just on GWS, 11th, only on percentage at the moment. So still very much in those wildcard positions. Now, Half, I was listening to this post-game. Toby Green joined us as part of the post-game interview, and he was asked about his future. This is what he said.
Oh, mate, I'm nowhere near. I haven't thought about it for a while. It's going to sit down at the end of the year. I'm more worried about trying to play finals at the moment, and that's what all my effort's going into. So I'm sure I'll think about that in time, but at the moment I'm locked in on making sure we can have a crack at, you know, being there in September.
Toby.
Now, Toby.
Toby, come on, Tobes.
Toby, it's time to launch into Half Serious on the back of this sort of stuff. I don't like to do this sort of stuff. But sometimes you've got to just make calls and be bold and tell it as it is. And what we're seeing at the moment, the modern AFL world, is that
There's not a lot of thinking going on.
Not a lot of thinking going on. That's exactly what I was going to say.
No forward planning for your future.
No one's thinking ahead. We're taking it one game at a time, and it's getting to the point of ridiculousness, because if you could tell me with a straight face, to my eyes,
Ben, look me in the eye, Toby.
Look in the eye, Toby. Can you tell me that you haven't thought about your future? It's round 17 and you're out of contract and you've been playing this game for 15 years. You know the sort of the landscape.
Got a young family.
Are you telling me that you haven't thought about what the future might like? You haven't discussed that with the home team, the bride and the kids, about what we might do next year for the next 3 years of our life? If you could tell me that with a straight face in my eyes, Toby Green, then I will tell you this watch.
And I think it's catching on. Like my unicorn, which has just spread like wildfire through the AFL. This I haven't thought about it, is catching on everywhere. Josh Fraser, serial offender.
Hasn't thought about it.
And there's a new one, isn't
there? And there's another one. Scott Pendlebury has done it today. He's on the host broadcast of Channel 7 saying that I haven't thought about it in regards to his AFL future. Now, that is an absolute lie. You're just telling me lies. The great Kevin Bartley used to say that lying is the second language of the AFL, when I used to work in the previous employer. And it just comes through every single week at the moment. Don't tell us, as Dennis Pagamon said, don't wean my back and tell me it's raining.
I'm glad you said it, not me.
I can say that because
you were there. You were in the room.
I received one of those. Don't do that to me. Don't treat me like a fool. I know it's a challenge. I know it's a hard conversation to have at times, but don't go telling us you haven't thought about your future, because that's a flat-out lie, and we are not stupid, us footy public.
Let's workshop it, Half. What else? Yeah, you are half serious. What's three better answers they could give than I haven't thought about it?
Oh, there's still a bit to play out, and I'll make a decision in due time.
We're working through it.
We're working through it, yeah. Well, you don't have to be specific.
All options are on the table.
All options are on the table. There's a lot, a lot of
that would probably be a headline. That's a bad answer.
There's a lot of conversations going on at the moment. A lot of time still to go, and a lot of water under the bridge. And we'll make a decision when the time's right.
So just keep your eyes out for haven't thought about it.
Yeah.
A lot of meditation, empty minds around the place at the moment in the AFL.
Haven't thought about it. Give me a spell.
Hawthorn defeated Carlton by 64 points. Torrential. Biblical rain at the MCG. I was very happy to be in the tracky dacks with the heater on, watching this on TV last night.
So was I.
All of the talk out of this game, though, is around the 50-metre penalty against Adam Chera.
Yep.
Jack Ginnivan from right on 50, march to the goal line. Matt Stevic, the 12-time grand final umpire, 60 AFL finals, long time as the best umpire in the game.
Yep.
But our takeaway here is he just got it wrong. He made a blue.
Yeah, he got it wrong. He made an error and he got caught in the moment. And I think it points to a bigger problem in the game, that the umpires are under so much duress. The game has become so complicated to umpire to remember what's what in terms of the rules, the protected area, the stand, what do I do here? Do I blow my whistle? Do I tell them the player? Oh, so much is required of the umpires now.
That they are discombobulated.
That they are discombobulated and befuddled,
as
you might have said through the call.
Yeah.
Something.
I thought Bob made an interesting point on that.
I reckon that's a factor. I really do. That there's so much in their heads now. They've overcomplicated everything, and he caught himself caught in a bit of a pickle and a bind, and didn't know what to do. So he just said, "Oh, well, I'll pay a 50," like with no real rhyme or reason to it. For a guy, as you said, 12-time grand final umpire, the best umpire in footy. So you're allowed to make mistakes, but they are under so much pressure they feel they can't, and they're making decisions on the back of it that just don't make any sense.
You only need to go through the decision tree of holding the ball to go, oh, you can understand why it's so hard and so complicated. Bob Murphy, I think off air, drew the comparison to players. When you see players do weird things, he says, look, they're being overcoached. They've got too many thoughts in their head that they just get, it all goes awry for them. So clearly, if you haven't seen the incident, the mark's about 47 metres out on a 45-degree angle. Chera's standing the mark. Ginnivan's sort of back 15 metres off it. A player, Hardwick, goes around the back. Ginnivan looks like he's about to give the handball to him. As Hardwick goes around the back, first of all, Stevic says, away, away, yep. Which I don't know why he has to get away when he's his teammate anyway. But then as Ginnivan sort of looks to give him the handball, but elects not to, Stevic flaps his arms in the play-on motion and says, player, like he just stops before he goes to say the on, realises, oh, he hasn't given the handball, so I don't need to say play on. Then
Chera comes off the mark.
He sees the umpire flapping his arms and hears the play on. And then Stevic says, you've run through the mark. That's 50. So,
all he had to do was reset. They say, hang on.
Stop.
That's not right. I said play.
Time on.
Let's call it back. Jack, go back to 50, please. Yep. Adam, just stay on the mark where you were. Yep. Let's reset this.
Let's go again.
Yeah.
But rather than pay the 50.
The pressure on these umpires and the rules that they are now enforced to interpret, which are great at the best of times. I think made that happen. And if it's happening to Stevic, this is the thing.
Yeah.
If it's happening to the best in Matt Stevic, you can just imagine what the other umpires are feeling at the moment. So I put this fairly and squarely on the desk of our man Swanee, who's listening at the moment. Mm. Good morning, Swanee. Skinny latte with one. it's on his desk when he gets there today to sort this out because it's ridiculous what's happening.
Yeah. They almost need a symposium, don't they, and get the umpires together and say, what do you need? What do we need? Well, how do we find more common ground?
We saw Rob Kerr come out the other week when we had the umpire contact situation. He was most unhappy with the way that was handled by the MRO and the AFL. And I agree with him just by the way on that. If I was Rob Kerr, I'd be demanding a meeting with Swanee. And I'll get Andrew Dillon in too if I need to. And I'll have a chat to them about what the hell is happening in our game and what you're doing to our people.
What I won't hear, though, is people try and put this at the feet of the stand rule. And someone will do that this week.
No doubt.
Mark my words. Someone on a TV show will say, this is why the stand rule's so stupid. Like, that was a 50-metre penalty for running through the mark. Like, it was the wrong decision, is what I'm trying to say. But that would have been that would have nothing to do with the stand rule. No. That's just a mistake.
Yes.
So I'm not going to cop that this week. I've done a horrible job of explaining it. But anyway,
he did get
a little bit rattled by it all, Stevic. A little bit later, he pointed the wrong way for a free kick.
This is what's happening, mate. This is the build-up.
But it did make me think, like, it is bizarre, our game. I've been watching a lot of the round ball World Cup. You point the way that a team is attacking for a free kick. We point the other way.
Why do we do that?
I can only assume because you go back off the mark that way. But it did get me thinking, like, the weird things we do in our Indigenous game half. So I started thinking, this is where my mind goes while I'm sitting on the couch. Five weirdest things about our Indigenous game.
The top five.
I've got a top five for you.
Steve Vizard sort of stuff from you.
The banner. Like, the banner's bizarre.
Yeah, yeah.
Crepe paper, team burst through it. Strange.
And they're getting very deep on the oval too. They used to be sort of run through the banner and appear for the fans. But now you're
on the edge of the square.
You've got to run 120 metres to get to the banner.
I've got team songs, huddling up and singing a song.
Well, that's number one, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. This is no particular order.
Okay.
Pointing backwards for the free kick.
Yes. With you.
Score for missing, so behind.
But it's important.
I don't know if that's in any other sport.
No, but that's what's an indigenous game. It's our game.
And our umpires to perform a skill. Previously the bounce, now just the boundary throw-in.
Umpires don't do anything else.
In other
sports?
I don't think they do.
Do they not?
I'm pretty sure they don't.
So the basketball ref just throws it up. That's not hard.
Oh, yeah, that's not really a skill.
Really a skill, is it?
Like ours, is it? No.
No, there you go. That's not a bad point. The team song, if you start it again, there's no way you're asking the combatants to link arm in arm.
Look each other in the eye. Sing a jolly
tune. Look each other in the eye and sing a ditty. Because that's what they are. They're little ditties. There's no way in hell you're doing that if you restarted this game from scratch.
No.
And people overseas, talk about Indigenous game, overseas sports fans must look at that and go, what the hell are they doing?
Yeah. Not to mention...
Why would they do that?
Not to mention short shorts and a singlet. Like, very bizarre stuff from us.
Yeah.
Collingwood defeated North Melbourne by 4 points on Friday night. And... I take away here half. The Pies are still the gatekeeper to the 10. It feels like if you're good enough to be in the wildcard positions, you'll beat Collingwood. If you're not, you'll lose to them. And North Melbourne did that back then.
Yeah. Well, I did the ladder predictor. Was it last week? and I had the pies outside. I had them in 11th. So you're probably right in that. You're probably right. And I gave them the win against the Gold Coast and the Kangas as well. It must have been 2 weeks ago. So it's a challenge for them to make it, in my view, at this stage. But you're right. You've got to beat them. It's not like quite like going through Chicago back in the old days to win the NBA championship.
This is sort of the halfway house to going through Brisbane.
You're not even going through Brisbane. You've got to go through Collingwood to make the wild card. And that's probably going to be the fact. It did highlight to me, watching that game the other night, it highlighted, I mean, without Nick Dacos, how many games would they have won this year, do you reckon?
Ooh.
Not many is the answer.
This is getting back to our old wins above replacement stat.
Yes.
How many wins above replacement is Nick Dacos worth?
Because he single-handedly won them that game.
He did.
On Friday night.
He had a season low, 28-1.
Which is...
It'd be a best night of the year for most players, but that was an equal season low.
Well, Thursday match committee, he'd be under the pump.
What about when he got it on when they were down by 3, 4 minutes to go, got it on the back flank and just took off.
And was
players
going
could not run with
speed.
Him.
Yeah, his speed is so impressive. Yeah. That's the one thing that I don't know if everyone loves or acknowledges that about Nick Dacos, because I know he's a great player, but his speed, like he gritted the teeth and he was going. He was going flat knacker and broke the game up. They got a goal on the back of that too, that little passage of play, and pretty much cemented the game for them. He's the difference. But without him, they're a bang average team.
Yep. Yep.
Well, the record probably says it as well, doesn't it?
Yep.
You won, what, 9.5 games out of 17, and you're 104.4. You're a bang average team.
Couple of things out of that game. So, Lachie Schultz with the syndesmosis injury as well. I was a little bit worried about Alistair Clarkson blowing up in the coach's box. Like, that looked like someone under a little bit of stress, and his contract ends end of next year. Also, just on that passage when Nick Dacos ran away.
Yes.
Dan Houston, Lady Shepherd. It lives. Missed opportunity to get the wings
was
out.
Arms out?
No, it was more of a bump. But
not interested.
We want the wings
he's
out.
He's not getting the wings out. He's not part of the team.
St Kilda defeated Port Adelaide yesterday by 14 points. And I think our takeaway here, Half, is that might have been the last time we've seen Zach Butters in a Port Adelaide jumper.
Well, a high-grade syndesmosis, he did look in a lot of pain for a bloke who's pretty tough. So when that's happening, you know he's under the pump. High-grade syndesmosis, it's minimum 8 for me. I know Port Adelaide is trying to sell us 4 weeks. I don't know how that happens. That's surgery and then the rehabilitation of that. And the question's got to be for Zach Butters, what's the reason I'm coming back? Because I'm not going to be there next year. And I think I'm just about taking it to the bankies at the Bulldogs. What's the incentive for me to come back and play? No one begrudges Zach Butters taking the cash and getting the opportunity to come back home. No, I don't think anyone in footy begrudges him that, even rock solid and hardcore Port Adelaide fans. He's been an amazing player for that footy club, giving them his absolute heart and soul. So those guys, I think you send off with your blessing. I don't think he needs a farewell game, certainly not against the Bombers in round 24 away at Docklands. I don't know what's the incentive for Zach Butters to hurry back and be a part of this Port Adelaide team. They're not playing finals. They're not getting a wildcard spot. Why would you do that?
We had Josh Carr on pregame on AFL Saturday, which is one of the five different flavours you can find in this podcast feed, and you should be listening to all five. We asked him about Zach Butters and when he needs to know about his future.
Oh, we don't need an answer right now, and we've had a number of conversations and I guess navigated our way through the year the right way. You know, like he's the captain on game day for us right now, and he's leading really well and doing everything right. So from our point of view, we've had the discussions that nothing's going to take place until the end of the year, and we're okay with that.
So it doesn't impact your planning?
Not at all. Not at all. We plan for everything. Both sides of the coin, and whether he stays or goes, we'll make sure we're prepared for both.
We work in this system at the moment where, it's very different to the NRL or even to some of the other leagues around the world, for example. But there's a little bit of the don't ask, don't tell aspect of it. If he has made a decision, would you want him to tell you?
Look, that's in the conversation. Do we want him to tell us? To be honest, it doesn't really bother me, Corbin. Like, as I said, it doesn't change our planning at all with the conversation. So, is it best how it is? Yeah, probably. We're having great, honest conversations and on where it's at. So, I'd like to think we're in a good spot.
And it wouldn't impact how you use him if you knew that he was, say it was going?
Not at all. Not at all.
Are you telling me that Josh Carr and the Port Adelaide Football Club have thought about it?
They've thought about it.
They're the only people in footy that have thought about it.
They're the only people doing any thinking at the moment. Jason Horne-Francis banned for 1 week. suspended for a bump on Liam Stocker. So Port will be without the Hornet. They'll be without Butters as well. Mitch Georgiades concussed, so they'll be without him too. Ends his 38-game goal streak, longest in the comp, so flat with that. They were down to two on the bench at one point. Port Adelaide, and one of those was Lukosius, who was hobbled as well. Adelaide defeated the Gold Coast Suns to make it seven consecutive defeats for the Gold Coast Suns. 79 points as well. Coaches shouldn't have to walk through the crowd at the Adelaide Oval half. Is that fair or unfair?
It's probably fair. It is probably fair. Chris Scott mentioned this at the start of the season, or midway through the year, didn't he, when the Cats were over there. It's probably fair, I reckon. It's an environment. It's such a... it can be such a hostile place, Adelaide, from an opposition fan, a relation, partner, coach perspective, that it's probably something you could, if you could avoid, you'd do it.
Yep.
Yeah, I reckon that makes sense. Clearly, it was never designed for that from the Adelaide Oval perspective when they did the redesign. Never really thought about that, how they would get coaches to the ground. But if you can avoid it, you probably should, I reckon. It just takes away that risk. And thankfully, through all the journey, we haven't had too many issues, really, of any great scale. But it doesn't mean it won't happen.
What about Damien Hardwick? This is what he said post-game.
It's not ideal, to be honest, walking through here. And I understand people are going to say stuff, and I've got to be better. But at the end of the day, those sort of people are the guys that live in their mum's basements and type on bloody social media forums and all that sort of stuff. But... yeah, we're not playing well. I've got to be better, like I said. But we've got to do something about it. It's a dangerous position to put us in, first and foremost. Security is okay, but we don't need people being peanuts about it. Get out of the basement, mate.
So that was Damien Hardwick. He's pulling the wrong rein, Dimmer. If I could live in my mum's basement, boy, would I. Hey, life would rent-free.
The modern world.
That'd be the way to do it.
Absolutely, living in the basement.
Sounds like a dream.
Selfish of my parents not to have one, really.
Correct.
On reflection. It's an emotional game.
He's an emotional beast. Yep. Competitive.
He's not coping well with losing.
Yep. The Western Bulldogs defeated the West Coast Eagles by 16 points. This was dangerous for a lot of this game, but my takeaway here, not about the Dogs so much as the West Coast Eagles. Reed and Dersma are going to be a problem for the competition for years to come. You've been broadcasting this game, you might not have seen it, but Willem Dersma, the Worm, kicked a magnificent goal, bursting out of the middle from inside the centre square. Willem.
Right, sorry.
The Worm.
Continue on.
And then Harley Reid snapped on from the pocket from an acute angle. Like, they're going to be a heck of a duo.
I think what we're seeing from West Coast, I've actually really enjoyed watching West Coast this year. They've had a couple of moments where you'd sort of close your eyes and squint and say, oh, I hope that doesn't happen again. And it does. But they're evolving into they've got the bones of a pretty good footy team, I reckon. So it's taken a long time. And the talent is just starting to emerge and come together. And time together for those young, talented players is going to be critical for them. But I see the bones of a really strong footy team. Now, it might be another 3-4 years away, but I can see it. So I'm with you on that. Dersma and Reid, if they can stay together, they're going to be a really potent pairing through the middle of the ground, and they'll hit scoreboard as well. And that's what the modern mid's got to be able to do. So your man, the Worm, and Harley look like they're going to be two of the best going forward from that generation of players to impact the games week in, week out. I like the bones of the Eagles.
Yep.
I'm into them.
Yep, me too. Essendon and Brisbane is ongoing, and Brisbane are running up a score on the Dons. It is, 77 points at the moment.
It was 85 points before, so they're coming back a little bit.
Half, great work as always.
Love your work, Benny.
Spread the good word. You can go on the Wall of Fame. Be a friend, tell a friend, send the photo proof to me. You've just slowed up a little bit. People under 50, least likely to share a podcast. I need a few more rolling through. This has been ABC AFL Daily.